Good evening and welcome, everyone. What a blessing it was just for an instant to see all of your faces here and gathered together. Each one of your presences is a great blessing to all of us. So we enter our time together to take our place, to engage in a conscious exchange, to feed and to be fed by the impressions given. May our work be food for lifting the consciousness of our world and ourselves. In the name of God, the Father and the Creator, God, the omnipresent, the all, God, the immanent, the spirit of life, eternally whole and one, yet manifested as a many. Amen. Tonight again, this week, we're going to begin our time by turning to Louise Gepford March, whose extraordinary notes of her time with Mr. Gurdjieff gives us a behind-the-scenes look at Gurdjieff, the man, the person with a capital P. You may recall that Louise March was born and we celebrated the anniversary of her birth last week. She was born on August 30th, 1900. She became Mr. Gurdjieff's secretary in 1929 and stayed with him for the 20 years until his death. She was the translator into of Beelzebub's tales into German as it was being written. And next week, I'll tell you a little story about that because it too is quite extraordinary. But in a small book of her letters and recollections compiled by a student of hers, we learned a couple of stories. This is she speaking. After lunch, as after most meals when I was at the Priory, Gurdjieff would play music on his harmonium. It was as if it were a prayer, a direct food for making another inner effort. I didn't analyze it. I just let it rain over me. One afternoon when Gurdjieff returned to the Priory from the day's writings at the cafe, he joined me on the terrace where I had been translating Beelzebub's tales. He looked very tired. I asked him, "Why don't you work here in the fresh air in these beautiful surroundings?" I gestured towards the rose garden, the goldfish pond, and the rows of sycamore trees out in front of us. Gurdjieff replied, "I always work in cafes, dance halls, places where I see people how they are, where I see those most drunk, most abnormal. Seeing them, I can produce impulse of love in me. From that, I write my books." What an extraordinary statement that is. I couldn't help but wonder myself if I looked upon the various foibles, if you will, of my own friends and family, those even closest to me, and seeing them in their weaknesses, I would see them rather with compassion and a gift to me in order to engender the impulse of love. How different everything would be. From that, I write my books. What a gift he is and was to us. And so, Louise March and Mr. Gurdjieff, we celebrate your lives this evening, and all those who were at the Priory, which was founded in 1922, in October, I believe, almost 100 years ago. May this evening be dedicated to serving the future, as you so aptly did. So now it is time to gather ourselves even further and prepare our being to enter into our time together fully with presence, present to the presence. Now is the time of self-remembering, to be receptive and gathered, awake to the fine energy within and among us, perhaps to all the energies within and among us as we gather them. For each of us is at this particular place and time for a purpose, and it is a rare privilege. How many people are there even interested in these ideas? Will I play my part? Will I work for the future? What each of us brings matters, and how we come matters. How we participate matters, for that is what we are emanating to the group, and what the group then emanates out into the world. So now we place ourselves here, now, with intention and imminent trust, taking perhaps all the heaviness of life and lifting it in hope and love in the midst of our own helplessness and vulnerability. With back upright, stilled, contained, we scan our bodies, perhaps noticing and then letting go of any points of tension and constriction. We breathe. We breathe in deeply all every most hidden part of our being, all being, everything. Everything that passed through us this day, our world today, everything that hurt, that confused, that created fear, that left us feeling powerless, less than, more than. Everything that uplifted, that loved, that brought joy and hope, all affirming, all denying, we hold it as offering, reconciled as food for our being. We ask that it all be transubstantiated in our being as whole, as lovely, as radiant, as beloved of God. We do this on behalf of everyone and everything. And we breathe out this healing light into the world, all worlds. I hand over all complexities. I hand over all plans. I hand over all the anxieties and small fears of my heart. I yield to the divine human life. I am here. I am. I wish. I can work. I stand unencumbered before God and one another. Amen. So now we enter into Lectio Divina. Our passage will be read three times with a silent pause in between each reading. You're invited to take it in as food. See what comes to meet you and allow it to resonate in your being, perhaps gifting you with a message. See how you respond. You are being taught to cast aside the old self. You are being renewed in the spirit of your minds and to clothe yourself with the new self created in God's image, in the way of uprightness and holiness that belong to the truth. The ocean can be yours. Why stopped beguiled by dreams of effervescent dew? The secrets of the sun are yours. Why content yourself with motes trapped in beams? There is a higher meaning of the world and ourselves. To know this requires conscious efforts. They must be renewed continually over the years before this thinking becomes real. The vision of life and yourself is then different. Divine will summons us from within to become our own will, to make an irrevocable decision to be answerable for the realization of its image, to be a servant of divine being. You are being taught to cast aside the old self. You are being renewed in the spirit of your minds and to clothe yourself with the new self created in God's image, in the way of uprightness and holiness that belong to the truth. The ocean can be yours. Why stop beguiled by dreams of effervescent dew? The secrets of the sun are yours. Why content yourself with motes trapped in beams? There is a higher meaning of the world and ourselves. To know this requires conscious efforts. They must be renewed continually over the years before this thinking becomes real. The vision of life in yourself is then different. Divine will summons us from within to become our own will, to make an irrevocable decision to be answerable for the realization of its image, to be a servant of divine being. You are being taught to cast aside the old self. You are being renewed in the spirit of your minds and to close yourself with a new self created in God's image, in the way of uprightness and holiness that belong to the truth. The ocean can be yours. Why stopped, beguiled by dreams of effervescent dew? The secrets of the sun are yours. Why content yourself with motes trapped in beams? There is a higher meaning of the world and ourselves. To know this requires conscious efforts. They must be renewed continuously over the years before this thinking becomes real. The vision of life and yourself is then different. Divine will summons us from within to become our own will, to make an irrevocable decision to be answerable for the realization of its image, to be a servant of divine being. And so it is. We will stop sharing now. And you're invited to share with us what you received from this passage, from this extraordinary ancient image, or the thoughts of your hearts, what came to meet you. Kay, good evening. Welcome.
Thank you, Marianne. That image we have had in the past, and I've always loved that image, and it's always spoken to me deeply with this person, this human, who has broken through some sort of veil and probably, even though he or she may not be able to stay there, their lives probably will be transformed and changed forever. So I love that. It really spoke to me. And then the other thing that spoke to me was the last paragraph that said that we can wish that divine will becomes our will. Mm-hmm. We have been told many, many times in the past from the work that wish is the most powerful thing in the world. We were told that many, many times. And at the time I was told it, I was fairly new in the work, and I didn't know even, first of all, what to wish for or how to wish big enough. So I'm thinking perhaps this sentence, to wish that divine will becomes my will and wish to be a servant of the divine. For me, that feels like at this time, maybe is the ultimate wish. Maybe there's more.
Yes. Thank you very much, Kay. The ultimate wish. Kay, good evening.
Good evening, Marianne and everybody else. The thing that struck me in this image was the two wheels up in the corner. And then I got to looking, there's a couple of what I consider suns, and they're like wheels. And then a couple of moons, there's a half moon, but still kind of like a wheel. And then in the reading, it was something like conscious efforts must be renewed continually over the years before thinking becomes real.
Yes.
And the idea of those wheels and the thinking continuously. I don't know, those two things just struck me rather hopefully that even though I have to go around and around and around, someday I'll get there.
Yes, indeed. Yes, thank you, Gay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Someone else. Van or Kelly? Van, I think.
It's just me. Hi, Marianne.
Good evening, Van.
So the end there, the word servant, it brought to mind an eye that I noticed or named not too long ago. I called it servitude boy. Mm-hmm. And it was an eye that was aimed to please. And it's pretty powerful, actually. And in naming this eye, I realized that there was a gesture there, but it was reversed, and the feeling that came out of it was of being in service versus mm-hmm. servitude. And the reading tonight starts with invited or invitation, and
yes,
and the gesture of invitation and of being in service, and at the end that I now hear this being a servant. A little more as being in service mm-hmm. and feeding. By being in service, I've found that the feeding of higher parts of the ray, what have you, is a great blessing. And in service, just the joy that comes from that, and how the identified servitude is so pulling down.
Yes.
It was a nice reminder of this naming of the eye and moving to a place of service.
Yes.
And the invitation involved with that. And mm-hmm. so it was nice to hear servant and associate it with service for me.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Van.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hopefully you can carry that forth with you after tonight too. Yes. Thank you so much. We have time perhaps for one more. If someone would like to share, you would be welcome. Perhaps someone who hasn't shared for a while. It would be wonderful to see you step into the light. Well, it's also wonderful to welcome Beverly McCune into the light, a longtime work student, practitioner, and work leader. And she is going to accompany us on our journey tonight into higher being. Well, good evening and welcome, Beverly.
Thank you, Marianne. And good evening, everyone. It's wonderful to be here with you all. It seems like this past week where we looked at the self, the different aspects of the self, essence and personality, real I, was very fruitful. There was a lot of good discussions in our journey group. And I'm thinking that's probably the case with yours as well, if you're in one. So let's start right away by looking at the homework from last week. All right, so the first thing we were invited was to move through the meditation exercise that was in the email that was given by Teilhard de Chardin, and to see what we discovered doing that. And then there was another invitation from the commentaries, a question that Dr. Nickel asked in that one: how can I produce a change in my internal nature that is real and not merely acquire what is on the surface, as is personality? He stressed work on the side of being. So we were asked to see, to look inside and look at our lives. What are we doing to feed essence? And then we were invited to consider joining in this upcoming class on for Bernadette Roberts' teachings, A Passage Through Self for Consciousness. And then in addition, the first week of our practice for September, singing and chanting. And I'm curious to see if anyone participated in that. So who would like to begin with our, begin the sharing tonight? Thank you, Linda, please.
Well, I took on the chanting because it's, I don't think I have a really good voice, but I know that that doesn't matter. I know that. As I walked, I also have been moving more and walking around the RV park that we are in several times a day. And chanting, and it's been, I have to smile at myself because it's been embarrassing to myself. Nobody even hears me. Everybody's in their hobbies or they're driving or they're walking. They're not paying attention to me. And yet I'm beginning to feel the three centers as I do it. After doing it for several days, I don't do it every day because I don't walk every day. Things happen, but it has been a really good practice for me this week. You know, the beauty of the outdoors, the sky. It's filled me, and I'm so appreciative of that. Thank you.
That's wonderful. So what specifically were you chanting?
Well, I was chanting the chant that was recommended.
It was in there. Okay.
On Sundays, because yeah. I know it. It's and it is one of my favorites. You know, I've chanted some of the Psalms, and that's great, but I really have loved that because you're addressing the Creator, and the Living One just speaks to me because it feels like I'm part of that, and then the One Indwelling is just, anyway, that's the one I chose.
Wonderful. That, yes, it is. I often hear that one in my head throughout the day, which is interesting. And also I just wanted to say, there's so many of us that think we can't sing. You know, we say that we have a bad voice which often, where did that come from? You know, someone told us that at some point,
choral teacher telling me.
And I feel for choral teachers because they have this picture of what they have to create. I get that, but oh my gosh, I can't tell you how many people who have been told that by choral teachers and the damage that that does, because I really believe that singing, using our voice, is so powerful. It creates this vibration that's so healing, just as you found. And so I am so glad that you have the courage, despite that old voice back there, to do that. You're blessing the world, everything around you, by doing it. So thank you.
It does feel like a prayer, as you know. Yes. It's very wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Becky, please.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Linda, you have inspired me. I love to sing, so you really inspired me. Well, this week, one evening, I spent some extra time just being silent in prayer and trying to ask God, you know, what is it that I need to see? And I was rather surprised, because it was like there were buffers that were parting, and I saw things in my personality in a deeper way. And, you know, I didn't feel like there was a critical eye, really, I didn't, but it was hard to see. And, but at the same time, I had peace about it. And then, I began to see, some couple of situations in my life, and that I have complained about to God and to others. And I remember I had just finished reading Michael Singer's book, Untethered Life. And during this time, I realized I remember a couple years ago, another work student said, you know, life is happening the only way it can. And that really bothered me at the time. But this week it said, well, of course it's happening the only way it can. And why do I resist it? Because, you know, I have everything I need. And that was the other thing that happened. I just felt like, there was a light that, not literal, but just, I felt like my path was illuminated, that I had everything I need for the situations in my life that are now and to come. And while I know that, I knew it at a deeper level with this experience. I felt like in this one situation that I already have all the courage I need. I the wisdom is there, and I have a community of wisdom. And then in another situation, I have all the creativity I need. I have the resources I need. I don't need to be afraid. I can work, do this with delight. So I just felt like I was just so strongly encouraged in the work and in prayer this week through the homework.
Wonderful. Yes. Thank you. Aren't those experiences such a blessing?
Oh,
yeah, it can really change how we see things, see ourselves.
Such a week gift. Was such a different week.
Yes.
That I haven't had a week like this for a long time. So wonderful. Thank you.
Praise God. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Cammie, please.
Good evening.
Hi.
Similar to Becky, I had kind of a surprise experience. I was frustrated because my work and my life has been very full, and I didn't get to sit in my meditation. And but I did have my daughter have her baby, which way back early when we started, I shared a picture of this little wondrous being growing in the womb. And now she's here, Phoebe Jean. And boy, did that just break open a new appreciation of essence to have me holding one in my lap.
Yes. Yes.
And to have the incredible joy. And then to think, I loved the sharing tonight about the wheels. That just made me smile, because I think the events of this week the work is amazing because when we set our hearts, things just happen that, you know, that on Tuesday I shared with my work group that I was feeling a need to for that time to be quiet, to return to stillness, that I appreciated this being, little Phoebe Jean coming into my life and reminding me of the essence and the buffers and the challenges I have of work that were keeping me, that were feeding personality, but not food for essence, and missing that food for essence. And, but my work also had me preparing for a harvest moon activity this week. Mm-hmm. And I was exposed to the gift of the moon, reminding us of the divine feminine and the maiden, the mother, and the crone.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that I had no wish. I had no wish or aim as what to become as a grandma. And that was such a beautiful thing for me to be invited into. That is my pathway to returning to essence, that my time in understanding that serving into being and the food for essence is through that wonderful transition from the gift first of maiden, then to becoming a mother myself, and now watching my mother be a, my daughter become a mother and me become a grandmother. So life and the work just really helps us when we open up to start to connect the dots. And so I feel my aim is being, is more clear.
Wonderful. Yes. Yeah. Oh, grandparenting is so amazing. It is just such a blessing. And really being in the work is such a gift when you're a grandparent, because you get to revisit your parenting, change some things, perhaps do things differently. There's so much, so many work opportunities and so many blessings in it. And it's, I mean, you get to see your children as parents. And that's really amazing too.
And a little more time than when you were the parent to give food for essence growth, right? I mean, you're in the throes of it as a parent.
Oh, yeah.
It does feel like a blessing to remember those days and to have the gift of a little more wisdom. Right. And to appreciate and feed essence through that experience.
Yes. And to be that presence for your granddaughter and your daughter. I mean, that's such a gift when they're, you know, those first months are just so tough. So it's a gift to have someone there that is able to hold center and self-remember in the midst of it. So blessings on your journey. Welcome to grandmotherhood.
Thank you.
Duberly, please. A man. Yay.
Hello, everybody. Just hearing y'all talk about grandchildren, there's something about looking into the eyes of an infant or a small child that is, I don't know how to describe it. It's magnetic and enthralling. And I can't help think that that's essence shining through.
Yes.
It's hypnotizing. And I can do it forever. In a way, I can't wait to have grandkids. Though not anytime soon, I hope. I think my kids are still very young. And we talked about this at our journey group this morning. What about children shows me what essence, or shows us what essence is about. And I know that, you know, Jesus has several teachings about being childlike. We talked about how children can be as entertained with a rock or, you know, a brand new playscape that just got put in their backyard. And it seems that everything's equally beautiful to children. I appreciate that. Everything is becoming equally beautiful for me. It's, And it doesn't, you know, even whereas I used to judge people for the shape of their bodies, that's going away. You know, and to be able to see the beauty in everyone, I think is a reflection of essence. Because I think what causes that is part of us really understanding, like Gurdjieff said about sitting in that cafe. You know, we're all the same. We're all, and actually the email says this, we have a basic core of goodness, and it's a spiritual leap when you're able to realize that and know it, because then we are indeed all equal and everybody is worth working for, in a way, the way Gurdjieff did. Mm-hmm. Anyways, yeah, I think that's all I have to say right now.
Thank you, Duberly. Yes, I see the childlikeness in you shining through, your essence.
Thank you. Wait till I sing for you one day. You might change your mind.
Nope. Thank you. Anyone else? We have time for a couple more. Well, I like Becky had a kind of an awakening this week. My dear work partner sent me some pages from Rebecca Nottingham's book, one of Rebecca Nottingham's books that talked about essence and personality. And what we're going to talk about tonight, with the personality being active and essence passive, and that triad of personality, essence, and life being third force, and that switches when we turn around, and which we'll be talking about. But first, I always knew about essence or personality being active, essence being passive, or actually personality being active, and third force being life. I never paid attention to it as a triad of forces, really, or especially the second force aspect. And what I saw in the way we are meant to be, where personality is passive, that essence becomes first force, and personality is second force. I never looked at personality as second force to essence, once essence is active and the work is third force. And it, for some reason, that hit me so deeply, because the story this one sings is that I'm not a good work student. I don't do enough. I, you know, blah, blah, blah. Nah, nah, nah. I just sing these songs about how bad I am. And some, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, right now, I mean, at this point in my life, I feel like personality is what is second force, the force of resistance to me. That's what's, you know, that the force of resistance, or that weight that kind of pushes back. And so I just felt like, yeah, you know, it's not the way I thought it was. And it just was very, made it feel hopeful. And that, I can explain it better when we have the diagram that I'm going to show, but it was just like, oh my gosh, I can let that one go. I can just let that go. It is about time. So that was just a gift. And I have my work partner to thank for giving me those pages. So the gift of our working together is just so great. Last chance. Anyone else? There is a lot to cover, so it'd be nice to have a little bit more time, but we have time. if anyone else would like to share. Okay, well, I guess we'll move on then. All right. So, no, of course, now it's not going to work. Let's see. You see that slide, right? The original one. All right, here we go. All right, our topic for tonight is metanoia. And that's the movement, this movement into a whole new mind and body. And this was first introduced, we explored it last year, last September, almost a year ago. And there is a reference to that in this email. So you can review that if you want. But I did just want to review a little bit tonight. So the metanoia is a Greek word that has two parts to it. Meta, which means beyond or transformation, and noia or nous, meaning mind. So really what we're talking about here is going beyond the mind, like it says, into a new mind and also a new body, as we'll talk a little bit about. So Dr. Nickel said, as it says in the email, that it's been used in the gospel, the word metanoia, but it's been translated as repent. And repent, he says, is totally incorrect. Repent gives you this feeling of, oh, I did something wrong. There's sorrow, there's regret, there's this, it's an emotional word. Or he brings up emotion, and he says it has nothing to do with that, that really metanoia is about going beyond the mind. It doesn't really have to do with the heart. And I would say not at the beginning. So as we move into change of thinking, when we start on the path of metanoia, we have change of thinking with new ideas that are brought to us, such as the work, and we really go into a new mind. We create, well, a new mind is created for us. We see things differently. Cynthia Bourgeau furthers that definition by saying that that we move from this world of thinking in opposites, you know, black, white, yes, no, good, bad, either or, to a non-dual knowingness, which really is of the heart. So ultimately, that's where we move towards with full metanoia. So that we know our wholeness. So before we, you know, look at what we can become, which is what we want to know, certainly, and what's talked about in the email, let's just go over what what blocks us from participating fully in the process of metanoia. So one of the things that the work talks about is this idea of internal considering or inner considering. This definitely stops metanoia. As you can see from this picture, it's all about me. That's what internal considering is all about. It's this internal complaining. We justify ourselves. We compare ourselves to others all the time. We judge others. We judge ourselves. And then we make accounts against other people and ourselves. We hold those accounts against others. And we think constantly about what others are thinking of us. And that points to those, what the work talks about, those two giants that always walk in front of us, then the giants of pride and vanity. I mean, you can really see that, you know. We think not only are we thinking about what others think of us, we think that others should be, look, or act differently too, you know, just judging always, but it always comes back to us. It's always very egoic. It's based on what I want, my requirements, my preferences. And it's the opposite of external considering, right? We're not focused on ourselves. But at the core of this really is this idea of feeling owed. We're owed. We're owed a better house. Life should be better. I should have a more handsome spouse. I should have a more obedient dog. Oh my gosh, you know, there's mud in the yard. Whatever. I mean, we can make accounts against everything, God included. So how do we, you know, move past that? Well, that's this idea of metanoia. This idea of reversal from looking at finding meaning in the world and having it be all about me to feeling like instead of I'm owed something, then it's the movement to I owe instead, finding out that, oh my God, actually, I owe for my existence. I owe for being given this incredible life. That's real reversal. And just a disclaimer here, I'm not with these pictures saying that men are always the ones that feel owed, that they're owed, and women, you know, just to say that. That's not what I mean by these pictures. So, you know, what is it that moves us to this reversal? Well, certainly it can be knowing that that, you know, something happens that awakens our magnetic center, that part of us that is drawn towards God. And when this reversal happens, then we really get connected with Gurdjieff's fourth obligonian striving, which is the striving from the beginning of our existence to pay for our arising as quickly as possible in order afterwards to be free to lighten as much as possible the sorrow of our common father. Now you can believe or not that God suffers, you know, but really what we know is that we suffer, humanity suffers. There's a lot of suffering in the world, useless suffering, unnecessary suffering. And when we move to this place of knowing that we owe that, and we begin on this path of metanoia, then we are taking our little piece of suffering out of the suffering of humanity, right? That lightens the load. That lightens the suffering of all of humanity. And if we, I think we all can probably agree that we think that the God is part of us, a part of humanity, is humanity within, without. So certainly we could not understand what God would suffer. We have to use words. Words are so limiting. But from our human perspective, we can't by any means understand what God experiences. But it makes sense that we would lessen the suffering of our Creator as well. And that then brings us to this feeling that we want to serve divine being, as we talked about in the, oh boy, in the, sorry, I'm going to try to get this back. There we go. Oh, no. Technical difficulties. So, yes. So moving on. So the one thing in the email that's talked about is this is the quote from Carl Fried or Carl Durkheim, I'll just call him that, which he calls the great experience. And he says that there are two aspects to the great experience, which is what leads us to metanoia. One is the experience of oneness, or oneness with all creation. And also he talks about, then we also feel that we experience how we as individuals participate in this greater being, in greater life. And so this totally changes how we can see the world. And we don't find meaning necessarily in the world anymore. Now, I don't know about you, but when I see the term great experience, I think of those experiences like some of the most amazing people, teachers out there have had, that in an instant, their lives are turned around and there's no more internal considering. Eckhart Tolle, I think of Byron Katie, the experiences of Bernadette Roberts, some of hers, although that didn't happen right away. But I don't think he necessarily means that completely, because if we look, and this is part of our homework for this week, if we look to our own lives, we find those moments, and it might not be a big, great experience. It might be what we would consider a great experience that totally changes us. There might be a little whisper. There might be something we see, something that just all of a sudden wakens magnetic center, or we start questioning what we're doing. We all of a sudden see that, oh my goodness, we do owe. So that it doesn't have to necessarily be a huge thing. But Durkheim does talk about how that one of the important things, one of the things that has to happen is this melting down of the world ego structure, as he says. Well, what is that? That is what we do with the work. We are working with our core practices of self-observation, non-identification, and self-remembering. Through that, through the seeing, through the letting go that happens with understanding, this ego gets our personality, all those coats, the overcoats get taken off one by one, right? Or several at a time. So an interesting picture of this is the story that is referenced in the email. Actually, it's a poem. It's a Sufi poem from the 12th century called Conference of the Birds. And this is by Attar of Nishapur. And it's a beautiful, beautiful story. And there is a link here in this slide to a website that talks more about it if you're interested in learning more. But basically, the story goes that many birds decide something wakes up in them that they want to go find this mystical bird called the Seamurg. They want to go to his house. And so the hoopoe, which is a large bird, is their leader. And so they set out on this journey. And now, you know, you can hear the likeness to the spiritual journey. This is really what it is, an allegory of the spiritual journey. So they have to journey through seven valleys that have different temptations and dangers. And the valleys are the valley of quest, the valley of love, the valley of knowledge, the valley of detachment, the valley of unity, the valley of bewilderment, and the valley of poverty and nothingness. And so after that last one, they finally get to the house of the Seamurg. However, only 30 of the birds made it there. Many died, many turned back, but 30 did make it. And the 30 that made it lost all their feathers on the way. Now, they get to the Seamurg's house, and they find that the Seamurg doesn't exist. Really, Seamurg was Attar's play on words, because in Persian, sea means 30 and murg means birds. So really, the meaning of the story is that We are what we seek. The birds were always looking for themselves. So what we are looking for is within us. And that's what we're talking about when we talk that we have essence, that real I is there, and that God is behind real I, that it's all within us. It's not out there, right? And all we have to do is what the bottom line, so to speak, is we have to lose our feathers. Those overcoats that surround the personality, right? It's this process of kenosis. It's another word for it. Self-emptying, emptying out ourselves of all the things that are in the way to being loved in the world, to having that total reversal of metanoia. So this kenosis really is the process of metanoia, or part of it. And so just to review, this was the diagram I was talking about before. From the commentaries, this is the situation as we are when we begin the journey, and then ultimately what we want to be at the end. So the first at the top, man as he is, humans as we are, we have the personality, right? Is personality's first force and is active. There are many eyes. You see, there are many eyes there. And essence over there is very small and it's undeveloped. And it's second force, or it's passive. All right. And in that triad, as I said before, third force is life. So when we're totally in personality, we haven't woken up, or those moments when we're super identified, right? We use life as our reconciling force. We try to use life ideas to solve our challenges. So then through metanoia, through going on the path of metanoia, through kenosis, emptying, using all the practices that we have, that we use, that we've been working on, then we move to a whole different situation, a total reversal of signs, so to speak, where now essence becomes first force or active. Essence is developed through feeding it, right? Through feeding it with the personality. It eats the personality in a way. It feeds on person, a false personality, if we want to use that term, all those eyes that are not useful to us. Once we see them and digest everything that surrounds them, then essence can develop. And look at essence in this picture, this diagram, compared to personality. It's open, it's emptied. It's free to be filled by spirit, to be filled with higher influences. It's there aren't all these preferences and requirements and personality patterns that block that flow of the divine through us. And then personality over here, one little thing, right? It looks like, in this diagram, it looks like there's one eye, that we become a unity. I see it more as it being possibly that either the eyes are all lined up behind that one, or they're contained within it, that they've come under the authority of essence, so that they're all under there. They may still squeak, you know, but they don't bother us. They don't get the microphone all the time anymore. They don't run the show. Essence does. And in this triad, of course, it's the work that's reconciling force. And that's what's such a gift for us when we turn around. When we participate in metanoia and this new thinking, all the new ideas, then there's the possibility of us becoming this of taking up the summons to serve divine being. That's what we want, and that's what we want to become. And it's a process, and it's really a blessing to be part of it with everyone. So I'm going to stop sharing now and to see if you have comments or questions. We got lots of time. So I hope someone has something to add. Whoops. Actually, I want to, let's see. Okay. Okay. Pam, please. Thank you.
Good evening. Well, Beverly, I read a commentary or a couple of commentaries that really echoed what you were speaking of. And for me, this was a week of really going against personality, because going to the intellectual center is not my go-to center at all. And I decided that that was what I was going to do. And in that process, of course, it brought me full circle back to, you can't just read or listen to the talks or talk about the work. You've got to do the work.
Yes.
And the last commentary that I read was in book three, and it talked exactly about what you're saying, that when the work is third force, then essence can truly learn from personality. And in another commentary, there was a distinction between personality teaching essence and essence learning from personality that I thought was really interesting. The other thing that the last commentary that I read in book three talked about was the fact that humankind is in that Mipha interval between the sun and the earth. And it's only when the work is used as third force that we can do what we're meant to do in this life, which is to bridge that gap.
Yes.
And so intellectual center served me well and brought me back to, I got to go back to the basics, you know, back to observing and non-identifying and self-remembering. And that's the only way that essence is really going to learn.
Yes. Yes, it does. Thank you for that. It's a good reminder there. You know, we love to work on the side of knowledge. For some of us, that's the easy thing to do. But to work on the side of being is just as important. Although working on the side of knowledge at the beginning is absolutely necessary. You have to take in the ideas of the work, right, intellectually.
And I had aspects of my personality that were saying, I've read these commentaries, I've heard this before, you know, why would I want to do that? And I had to put that eye away, or group of eyes, and say, you know what? Believe that you need to go back and reread and learn all over again. But it did bring me full circle back to doing the work rather than reading about it. So.
Right. And they're new every time you come back to them, right?
Don't oh, yeah, that? Absolutely.
He's like Tim used to say, did I ever read that?
Well, I'll have highlighting and I'll think, did I do that?
You're right. Exactly. Exactly.
So, thank you.
Thank you, Pam. Cammy, please.
Thank you. My question kind of follows on that, because I got caught up in the email with this idea of metanoia being first in the mind and not about the heart. And I get confused by that, because there's an I in me that is attached to an understanding that is familiar to me with. And I think that the Journey School has looked at the work of heart math and the understanding of emotion and our emotional center being actually a part of a necessary initial part in order for the mind to be able to take on a new impression. So I don't want to get caught up in that, but I did. And I, at times when I go to the commentaries, I can hear kind of, at least in my new impression of it, a little bit of competing agendas with that. But I think that what you said just a moment ago, Bev, was it is the wheel, the revisiting of these things, that there has to be some knowledge taken in and that there is a role for the heart eventually at some point. But I just really feel strongly that the heart is a very important part of the metanoia.
Oh, yes. And I feel that too, because it's the heart that gets activated when you have that experience. I mean, it's not an intellectual thing, right? To me, it's like a three-centered, it would have to be a three-centered experience. And the experiences that I've had, I mean, it turns you mind and heart.
Yeah.
You know? So yes, it's, I would say it does. I think he's pointing to the fact that it's the okay.
I'm sorry.
No worries. the word has been translated incorrectly. And so he was trying to make that point back then, you know, that he was ensconced in the church.
Yeah, and I totally get that point.
Yeah.
That point is real. Well, thank you. I just needed to kind of quiet that, my own internal rub with that.
Yeah, well, good for you. Good for you. You can step back a little bit and see it. You're willing to look at it. So that's the work. Thank you. Karen, please.
There we go.
Yep.
Thank you. Well, you know, for me, the absorption of last week's work was very, very beneficial and helpful to me, in that I saw where I could separate this personality or my eyes from the essence.
Mm-hmm.
I saw where, you know, oh, I've been trying to use personality, you know, the wrong way. And though, therefore, I, you know, was so caught in this cycle. And I was so grateful to practice more of this, the quote on the end of the second page about the fundamental goodness of human nature is the essential element of Christian faith. Okay. So then I realized, okay, so I can have faith, and I do have faith that this trans, you know, that I will be changed, and that I'm not going to be doing it with personality, and that I'm going to be doing this with my learned knowledge of, you know, where can I put these parts of myself, as in first force, second force, third force, or staying, you know, lined up in the middle. And what then came to me is, if I know when I have faith, I also know when I have essence, even though I didn't know that. I called it more about my intuition. And the difference was that I owned it. This belongs to me. Not in a selfish way,
right?
But, you know, this is actually mine, like the faith I use, and the essence that I use. And for me to look at, not that essence takes over, it's just that the essence can cut through the personality and can, you know, see through, begin to see through all these elements in there, how well they're connected, and how once I get identified, seem to line up and have a parade. But it made the work for me so much more meaningful, and where I can place these different parts of me, and how, when and how can I notice when I'm being given a message? You know, and I know it because I have that essence that I can feel it, and it's like, oh, there's one. There's one. There's many. And just the difference in the joy I feel in living my life is knowing that these wonderful, you know, the goodnesses from my from God are coming at me all the time. You know, I breathe it. You know, it's, and not only is it out there, but it is in here. Yes. And I could make that shift to making it, okay, this is mine. And that just felt so precious.
Yes, wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Karen. Isn't it wonderful that brings us these seeings? So
yes.
Yes, thank you. Jill, please.
I wanted to bring in the exercise that we were invited to, the homework last week of, it was Teilhard de Chardin's experience of taking the lamp and then leaving ordinary life and going down. And ultimately coming to the abyss and the flow. And as you were describing metanoia, I was seeing that this is metanoia. When we turn around, usually we're going out into the stream of life and getting caught up in those energies that draw us further out into reactivity. And so that exercise for me felt like going down is the return journey home, which is metanoia. It's changing the direction I'm looking for my happiness and for my meaning, and going all the way down. And that's leaving personality and the surface world and going deeper within and deeper towards that true source and current of God, rather than going outward to the and joining in the surface of life. And another part of the homework was to what feeds essence. And it struck me that the only way I can do that is everything we talked about in the last quarter was about practices, and that all of those practices give me the stability and the willingness, the grace to be able to make that return journey home. And just from going deeper in a couple of the practices with adding on Sabbath and allowing it to get grounded and rested and stable one day of the week, feels like it has allowed parts of my life to come into order just quite naturally, so that then I have the wherewithal to be able to call a stop when I feel the personality spinning out. And I use that inner stop. And for me, it's a physical and an inner stop, because I start spinning faster outside as well. And to be able to stop it, then I have that choice point where I can remember and go back towards my aim and towards what I'm working for. And I had an experience that started my day today of realizing it's not just important for me, but it's important for the atmosphere around me. And I had a very troubled patient first thing early in the morning, and the staff was all going out and into drama mode and fear. And to just be able to, I felt nothing but calm and peace and a love for this man that was experiencing a really hard time. And to be able to go into that room alone and feel safe and to be able to put my hand on his arm and which allowed him to have tears come up, which allowed him to connect with grief that was underneath this acting out he was doing. It just felt so important that I be grounded and have come from a full morning practice before going into clinic. And so it's not just us doing our work going in, but it also has the potential for creating an atmosphere where others can go to a deeper place and not be pulled out.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. That the vibration that we create when we're centered like that, I mean, you saw the effect. It does affect everybody around us. So what a gift. What a gift. Thank you. Thank you for witnessing that. Thank you. Okay. Becky, please.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Yeah, these last two lessons were so powerful. And, you know, I just heard them so newly, that whole thing about personality and essence and how personality is on the horizontal level. So we look at our past and our future. It's a lot of, you know, culture, parents, and then the essence is the horizontal and or the vertical. And, you know, and it was, it reminded me, and also that the homework of that poem reminded me so much of a book that I read almost 20 years ago when I was first diagnosed with cancer about healing your life and going into the underworld. And you could take a light and a sword, you know, to deal with things that weren't working in your life. And it was so powerful. And that just really took me back. And it was funny because I was sitting in the infusion center again, I've been dealing with for 20 years. But the one thing that I was left with, just with those visuals that you gave us tonight, was that empty circle that I almost had. It was like almost a love hate. It was kind of uncomfortable, like, because I was left with nothing. And so, you know, and with nothing, of course, you can create anything, you know. Okay. However, that can be very challenging. It's like a empty canvas, you know. They always say, just draw a line, just draw a horizontal, the horizon, you know, anything to get on the canvas, you know. Yeah. I just want to hurry up and put something in there because it was unfamiliar, you know, but I had this feeling of awe and wonderment for the first time. It's like, you know, it's like anything is possible. Yeah. And so then just that practice of letting go, and I had this sense of, with all those millions of eyes in the personality, is like putting my arms around them and bracketing them and then just kind of setting them aside. And then that created the empty circle. And it was just really powerful. And how that's what we're doing with this work, is that diminishing the eyes, you know, and building up the essence. So anyway, it's just been an amazing couple of weeks. So thanks.
Oh, thank you, Becky. Thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You're welcome.
Yes. And when we're emptied like that, that's that gift of a new mind, a new body. It really does affect our physical body as well.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like what Bruce Lipton says in his book, that beliefs affect our biology. They affect what happens, you know. And so it's so important on so many levels.
It's so freeing. I mean, you think about, you know, freedom and how many people, that's what, unhappiness. It's like how it's available. I mean, you know, how it is actually is possible. So yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. But it does start with the mind. Yeah. It is amazing.
Yeah. It's mm-hmm. We're so blessed to have mm-hmm. these. Thank you for your sharing. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes. So we're just about at time. So the homework is pretty self-explanatory. Again, I encourage everyone to participate in the singing and chanting practice for this month. In whatever way you do it, this week we're invited to take just a small little sacred word, a sacred sentence that is meaningful for you, and to chant it. So just something like, with God, all things are possible, just on one tone, you know, with God, all things are possible, with God, all things are possible, whatever you is meaningful for you, to really feel the vibration, that bone conduction that happens when you sing. It creates, I don't know if you can see this, and if it's backwards or not, but this whole field of cymatics, which is this study of vibration and how it affects our bodies, it affects everything. I mean, it actually is, this is a picture of when a tone is put into a substance, that's what it creates. It creates mandalas. It's amazing that there's been studies with water and such, but that's happening all around us. Our bodies are water, so vibration, so the vibration of the voice. If we could only see what's being created through our words and through our singing, it would be amazing. And that can help metanoia, right? Singing is such a gift to change how we feel, how we think. So do it. And I'm putting in a plug in for those of you who are in Austin, we're going to start choir again. Ha! So thank you all for your attention and intention. May our work this week be blessed. Amen.
Good evening, and thank you, Beverly, for that joyful affirmation on ending our class. So now we'll all be singing. We'll all be singing. You know, I'm one of those that the choral teacher said there was no hope.
Bah.
With no hope. But I can go around, you know, just like Linda did in the neighborhood and sing out my heart, and maybe the dogs will start barking or something. I don't know. But thank you. And everyone who shared and is present, you know, what a joyful, affirming evening for all of us. And I have a quick couple of sentences I'd like to also read from Rodney Collin is our closing message, because it's related to what tonight was about. He says, work begins when we learn to separate ourselves from what we are not, when we get the taste of our true selves. And I'm going to leave all of it. I won't read the rest of it, only to say only the real self can follow Christ, which is our essence. And I think we were saying that and evidencing the taste of ourselves, our true selves, our essence. So let us join together and praying aloud, or maybe we should chant it, but the prayer of God's love. And that could be our chant as well, that God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake, and watch over us as we are asleep, that we may awake, we may keep watch with Christ. And asleep, rest in Christ's peace.